Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Back to Anything is Possible.
Anything is possible!
Fresh and Keith on EEI.
Tom Brady is upping his boat game in an absolutely massive way. For $6 million, Brady has purchased a 77-foot super yacht. This will be from the same family as his now smaller boat that he purchased in December and took in the Super Bowl parade. The new boat has bedrooms so that 9 people can stay on the floating house comfortably, along with 2 crew members. The boat will have the same name as his smaller version, Viva Avida.
Nice. Well, you can't hide money. I don't know if anybody's ever heard that before. I think if you know people with money, you realize that, yeah, they can't hide money. And, well, that's Tom Brady buying boats, never leaving the state of Florida. I really do wonder. Maybe we have to email Bob the Tax Man. Bob Raiola is a guy on Twitter who figures out the tax. I wonder what Brady lost in taxes by playing in Massachusetts versus Florida.
Oh,
and,
I know.
And if that leftover dough went towards Tom Brady getting this new boat, new yacht, whatever you want to call it. But Tom Brady said some stuff over the weekend that we examine with you here with Gresh and Keefe on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. You can listen to us at WEEI.com. You can also listen to us anywhere on the Odyssey app. But it kind of all ties in together with what is going on in New England right now. And that is, we got a lot of guys, Rich, that are showing up to this off-season workouts, according to Mike Reese, who put in his column over the weekend. One member of the Patriots who has been at voluntary off-season workouts estimate more than 50% of the players have been present. Now, they arrive at different times of day, series of small groups. One common thread that was relayed to Mike Reese was that it helped establish a competitive culture in the weight room. Matt Slater, no shock, is in some ways the heartbeat of the room, longest tenure player on the roster. He has been a regular. Slater is apparently going to talk to people tomorrow. So I guess the question is, for those that have really been in and following this stuff, are you surprised there are this many players here this early in the offseason program?
Yes and no, just because you saw some of the other teams out there that were just not going to do it at all, right? It seemed to be sort of a mixed bag on what you were going to have. I think it was just a handful of teams that were like, nope, we're not going to do any of this stuff. We can do some virtual stuff. We're not even going to meet. But then again, you also had that story with a player from Denver who was training on his own and got hurt. And they're like, well, you weren't really doing a team thing, so now we're not going to...
We don't owe you the money.
We're going to have to pay you.
Yep.
So, and I think also how guys feel about it now versus last year is a whole lot different, right? A number of guys, at least they've been eligible to get vaccinated. So if you wanted to get vaccinated by this point here, May 10th, I bet most of these guys have.
And if you're a Buffalo Bill, you should, considering the GM Brandon Bean was like, all right, we might cut guys who aren't vaccinated.
So, I think so guys are, and, you know, some of them obviously last year chose to not even play. And I think it's a little bit different. And they're probably also just looking to get back after it. There's a bunch of new guys on the team this year, too, and last year didn't go as well as anybody would have wanted to on the entire New England Patriots team. So I think some of that kind of pushes them towards, all right, let's get together. Because we've seen so many groups working out anyway. Like they had the Patriots West and all this other stuff. And so if you can, if the facility's open and guys are going to be allowed to come, then yeah, they will.
Yeah, I think they should be here, quite honestly. I hope they're here because I think ultimately it's going to make the New England Patriots better. But the part of this that we're going to get into with Tom Brady here is the, is Brady actually being selfish with some of what he told the players through the NFLPA. Now, the NFLPA had a call on Friday, and Brady spoke, according to Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. Yes, Brady got on the call, which dealt with the union's push for players to stay away. Brady told players to, quote, have very intense negotiations, end quote, with their teams about modifying off-season work. Brady said the NFL is the only league with overly competitive drills in the off-season and that last year showed there is a better way to prepare. Reportedly, Brady said, quote, there's no effing pro baseball player that's throwing 95 in mid-December. What do you make of the Brady comments to the rest of the union?
I think he took the absolute extreme example because pitchers are so fragile. A lot of them are pretty soft. And, yeah, they definitely have to manage those guys and their arms. So that's the, that is far and away out of the four major sports, the one example I think that, yeah, you're right. You're telling me that some of these basketball players don't go full go in the offseason, don't have these full go scrimmages? Hell, remember the Last Dance documentary when Michael Jordan was filming Space Jam? He had all these NBA guys come out and they would have, Reggie Miller was like, these were the greatest games ever. People were playing their asses off. So basketball, I think guys year round play really hard. And as they get older, I'm sure LeBron does it less now than he did when he was younger, but they definitely do. And also, football is just such a different sport, too. And you only have the 16 games. You got to do whatever you can to stay in shape.
17.
But I, oh, yeah, 17 games.
I know. It's going to be hard.
I'm not going to be able to remember that. But also, are they really doing full go, full contact, laying guys out the summer? Like, what is he even talking about? Plus, he's always trying to get extra work. Last year, the PA said, don't work out, don't hold group activities. He's like, got it. He's going to parks that are closed down in Tampa and getting his teammates together. So I don't know where Brady was coming from with this. Also, he was like, yeah, last year proved that it worked. Yeah, for you. It worked for the Bucks.
You got to it now.
It worked for the Bucks.
And that's the thing. I think Brady is being a little selfish here because what does Tom Brady thrive on? Preparation, knowing what you're going to do and being a step ahead. And what will slow you down from doing that? Be around organized or not being around the organized team activities, not being around in minicamp, not being able to have installation for, I mean, look, part of the offseason, I think, is vitally important to the Patriots in trying to get the baseline.
Yeah.
They'll come along much more quickly on defense, but on offense, you got to get the baseline in as to what you're going to try to become. And if you're someone like Brady, who, by the way, is surrounded with all the guys he played with last year, he's still got Gronk. That offensive line should be pretty good. I think there's a little bit of the, I'm a good union man,
but I'm
also being selfish at the same time because I know I'm going to school these fools.
I just think it's, once again, and it's kind of odd coming from Brady, but it's the players have weird priorities. Because remember some of the things, even Aaron Rodgers a couple years ago with that CBA was talking about days off. Like, they were fighting for days off and less practices more than, I don't know, guaranteed contracts or things that really matter. Like, these guys are trying to get less practice. And you're like, okay, it's already way down from what it used to be. You know, you talk to an old school guy about the two-a-days and all that stuff. And that
Brady remembers that.
That's right. Brady's been here
long enough.
He remembers that. And then eventually, like, I don't know when it's going to completely impact the game. And you can already say it does now.
Oh, it does.
You know, the missed tackles and just defense not being as good. Well, part of that is they don't really tackle in practice anyway. And then for Brady to say they want to do more virtual stuff, like, this is the guy that was breaking the rules last year to do stuff in person. And now he's telling everybody to get back on the Zoom call. Like, I just, It was odd to hear that this weekend.
And we got Bruce Arians, who has apparently been quoted as saying, like, hey, I'm not bothered if the players do their off-season work.
Well, of course, like, Bruce isn't.
Yeah, he's Bruce like, is like, Brady yeah, wants whatever. Yeah. That's really what it is, yeah, right? Yeah. It's whatever Tom wants. But, you know, this to me feels like one of those situations where Tom Brady is going to be able to talk out of both sides of his mouth, right? It's the, hey, you 53 in the locker room that yeah, I've helped put a lot of you people here and all that stuff. Hey, I'm going to say one thing, but we're going to do something completely different because we want another ring. And it's the anti-Celtics.
Right.
Tom Brady could walk in that room, fart, and people would say it's the greatest fart ever laid,
yeah,
and they would follow that guy.
But also,
like right now, they're listening to him.
If Tom Brady, go back to 2000 and 2001, so before Bledsoe gets hurt, he's on the team all of 2000, he's on the team during camp and the preseason and the first couple of games of 2001, if they were doing almost all that stuff virtually, do you think Bill Belichick would have even known that Brady might have something
or that the
team would have had a sense of it? So it's also one of those things where young guys, and not the first round picks, I mean, those guys are going to be fine. They're going to have their job. But some of these other guys, like, how do you even really know? How can you really evaluate some of these guys?
If Matthew Slater, his hand is stamped.
Yeah.
Matt Slater is one of the rare people in New England. If he wanted to say, Bill, you know I'll be ready. But he understands the importance to the rest of the group and the rest of the team. And that's why that guy, what's he, 12 years in?
At least.
And he's still grinding as if his roster spot depends on it. And that's why Tom Brady is successful. Let's be real.
Mm-hmm.
There are no, like, with all due respect to guys like Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson and other great quarterbacks, they're not putting in the work in the offseason that Tom Brady is. And it's not just because Brady's old and he has to make sure that the joints are still lubricated and he can move. It's just because that's who that guy is. That's why this flies in the face of everything that is Tom Brady. And to me, I took it as being a little selfish, quite honestly.
Yeah, and it's funny. I saw a tweet over the weekend from Tom Curran, who, again, we'll talk to tomorrow. But he, in response to Tom Brady and his message to the PA and everything, he says, Curran says, don't let them work you too hard, says the guy who runs around his backyard wearing a helmet and shoulder pads in June.
Yeah.
Like, you're right. Like, you always see this stuff. Like, the TB12 thing is so important to him, and he's out there all the time, and he doesn't stop watching tape. He doesn't stop working out and all this. And now he's like, hey, let's ease off the practices, guys.
He
like,
smells weakness, man.
Yeah, I know.
The guy is really ruthless when you think about
it. But it is one of those things where he's like, we don't need it as the Bucks, and we're going to go do our own thing anyway. And if we can sort of get everybody else to take their foot off the gas a little bit, be like, hey, Packers and Seahawks and Rams don't practice as much, and then it's only going to come up everything Tampa Bay anyway.
Of course it is. Of course it is. This guy's amazing. He really is. Hey, make us a part of your changing routine. We know that you're getting back to work and everybody's getting vaccinated. You can tell your smart speakers to play WEEI and take us wherever you go at the Odyssey.com app or WEEI.com/listen. Eric in New Hampshire wants in on Brady with Gresh and Keith. Hello, Eric.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up?
Hey, just, you know, Brady is so far off base with those comments. You know, you look at every other professional sport. Well, there's no other professional sport that is 4 months. Like, the football season is 17 weeks. It's 4 months long. Baseball, you're playing from April till October. You know, even hockey, you know, you're playing from September to June. You know, these guys are only playing for 4 months. So why wouldn't they have more intense off-season workouts? They have more time off during the off-season. And it just goes to show how out of touch with reality Brady is and how he just doesn't live in the real world.
Yeah, I also don't really understand his point about, you know, nobody goes full go in the offseason. It is a good point. Like, you have a longer offseason than everybody else, first of all. So if you want to hit the ground running when camp and preseason begins, you need to be. But I don't know how many, like, full contact practices or drills that they really have between March and August or March and July. Like, how many?
Don't you think there might be a little old school sort of PTSD with Brady? Because, come on, back in the day, we know what they were doing. That's why these rules are put into place.
Right.
Like, when Brady first got into the league, these things weren't voluntary, and B, when you did it, you know that they were out there doing something, right? Like, maybe even the Ravens have been, I think, fined and had OTAs or part of the amount of their OTAs pulled from them because they try to slide in some of the contact stuff. And now the play, see, I think back in the day, the players are willing to shut up. Like when Willie McGinnis was hearing people like that, it would be, well, we're doing what we need to do to win a championship. And I would quibble a little bit with the whole, it's a 4-month season. It really isn't. Because remember, you're going through camp and playing those preseason games. Then you're now playing 17 games in 18 weeks where you really get worn down. And now the Super Bowl is going to get pushed to mid-February. I mean, you know, Tom Brady, I looked it up last night. Tom Brady has played 45 playoff games. And when you average that out, that's almost 3 complete seasons under the old 16-game model. This guy has played almost three extra years of football. So we wonder why he's maybe a bit of a maniac to be able to get himself through a season.
But between March and middle of August, does he get hit?
No, he doesn't.
You have to throw the ball. You got to keep your arm in shape, but you also get to choose how much you do that.
But I do think for a lot of guys who aren't quarterbacks, those people need that. Like offensive linemen, you know, we don't hear, hell, even Brady for a period of time. Remember when we would hear, oh, Tom Brady played with, you know, cracked ribs or a messed up elbow or something like that, and he would find a way to grind it out, and then there would be the recovery time on that. Like, we don't know the whole surgery piece of it. So there, I do think Brady is talking out of both sides of his mouth. But I think I can at least appreciate the fact that he is being a little selfish in doing so, because the guy just wants to forget lapping the field. Like, he wants to end every debate as to who the greatest football player has ever been.
I think he already has, but this year is probably going to just add to it.
You're okay. Right. You and I got into this a little bit the other day, and I know on Wednesday night, I hate the NFL for doing this, right? Like, normally it just used to be, well, the schedules will be out and they get leaked. It's got to be on ESPN and NFL Network and Amazon. Everybody's got to have their schedule show and all that stuff.
Right.
But if you were to really narrow down when you think this Patriots-Bucks game is going to come up within the schedule, because I was watching NASCAR over the weekend on Fox, and even they were promoting the very first game they hyped, Brady's back
it's
to New
the biggest
England.
Game. Biggest game ever.
But when do they do it, though?
I don't want it too early. I know there was one of the leaked schedules. I think it said week 4, but again, that could be crap. Again, that could be crap.
Right.
I'm not going to go with that, but I don't want it too early. That'd be the absolute earliest that I would want it, because I kind of want this new look Patriots team to sort of get, you know, some footing, because last year they kind of blew one of the great games in Bucks Saints right out of the chute, and the Bucks weren't really ready,
right?
And the Saints beat them, like, oh, that's kind of a letdown, like that. Where if you put that later, and I know they played each other twice, but I would have saved that a little bit. So give me, I would like right smack in the middle of the season. Give me like a week 8 game. That's what I would hope for.
So Mike Reese wrote over the weekend, the NFL will release its schedule on Wednesday. Two of the top questions TV executives are asking, who gets the Bucks-Patriots game, which you and I did touch on, and when will it fall on the schedule? And Mike wrote the following. There might be some similarities between the old Brady-Peyton-Manning-Patriots-Colts duels, which used to be locked in for November, because executives strategized it would help produce the biggest TV ratings during sweeps.
Ooh.
From 03 to 11, there were 9, that's amazing, 9 Patriots-Colts regular season games.
That's great.
7 were in November and 1 the first weekend of December.
Yeah, so November, that'd put you week 8, wouldn't it? Right around there? Or would, I guess, maybe even 10?
It's in that range based on how the bye weeks
fall. I would
fall.
Love that. Yeah. Now, do you have a preference over Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night, Sunday afternoon?
I have a hard time believing that it isn't going to be in one of those primetime slots.
I hope they don't waste it on a Thursday, because I feel like you're going to screw that up. Like, is one of the teams coming off a bye? Is one of them not? Like, make it kind of even, and I hate the Thursday anyway. Sunday night makes a lot of sense, but then what you'd have to do is, because you're giving them such a monster game, you have to say, hey, NBC, you can't flex out as many games as you want or whatever else, because they have the ability after week 10, I think, to steal games. But because this is it should be a Fox game. If it was just a Sunday game.
Because
the NFC is a road team.
Right.
In this game. So,
but that indicates Thanksgiving might be in play. obviously in November.
No, because Thanksgiving, the night game's NBC.
No, but that's what I mean. Like, you know, your point, it should be a Fox.
Yeah, it should be a Fox.
Because it's NFC team in an AFC team's home park, so to speak.
Just going to be crazy. Yeah, that's the one that everybody wants.
That is clearly the one that people will be sort of honed in on. Mm-hmm. And it also is a reminder of how Tom Brady has had sort of different adversaries over the course of his career. Like, you think of the whole Brady Manning thing.
Oh, Brady Manning was great.
And that, but there's a story to tell of up to 2011.
Yep.
And then, oh yeah, when he went to Denver, and then they lost two AFC championship games to Denver with Peyton Manning there. You know, it's pretty interesting when you look at that whole ride in history. Did you happen to see the tweet from the McCourties weekend?
Yeah,
yeah.
I did.
It made me crap my pants.
Did you really?
When I saw it initially, now for those who missed it, the McCourties have their Twitter, and both Jason and Devin share the Twitter account.
I never understand. I like both these guys a lot. We had them both on the show. It's just, it's an odd move. I do not understand it. What are they, the Bella twins?
Yeah, I don't get it. Well, stop.
All right. Well, they share an account.
Well, do they really? I didn't realize that.
The Bella twins have an account.
Well, I only go to their Instagram. I don't go to Twitter.
And for a while, yeah, okay. And for a while, they actually changed it, but Ben Zobrist and his wife shared an account for a while, and then they eventually each got their own.
And then the divorce came. Yeah, I'm kidding.
No, they're doing great.
But so Devin McCourty did not tweet, and I thought he did. It was Jason McCourty who put a heartfelt, hey, New England, you know, don't be sad that it's over. Be happy that it happened kind of thing. And when I saw that and I saw a McCourty brother in there, I thought, oh, my God, Devin McCourty's retiring. What's he doing?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go in there and you click on it and you realize it's from Jason McCourty, who signed with someone over the weekend. Miami. Okay.
Yeah, Miami Dolphins.
So he's going to go to Miami and go play for Brian Flores. But God dang, man, I saw that Twitter account, I'm thinking, my God, like, because if Devin McCourty walked away now, that would be a massive blow to this roster.
That would be a bit of a loss. But I was just waiting for Jason. I thought it was going to be Jason retiring. That's what I thought it was. Because I also saw another tweet from Devin, who had like a reaction tweet to like the J-Mac news or whatever. Like, whatever. But it's all from the same account. Like, it's very like
very confusing.
And so I thought Jason was just going to retire. But no, he's going to continue his career. And, you know, Patriots will see him twice a season.
And good for him. I mean,
Look, why not?
He did the job he was supposed to do here. There's no doubt. But just don't give me a freaking heart attack, for God's sakes, thinking that that Devin is the guy retiring. So Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, the NFL schedule will drop. If we are lucky, we will at least find out when the Tampa Patriots game is.
Only game that matters. And wouldn't you also say if it's November, December, the chances of Brady, Mac Jones is much, much higher? Or if it's early in the year, I would almost bet my house on Tom Brady, Cam
Newton. You want Brady against new Brady if you can get it, if you're the networks, you know? Or at least that's the way they're going to position it and look at it. If you're Bezos, do you just wake up and go, I'm going to screw this up? I mean, I'll give you $200 million for the game. Yeah,
put it on Prime.
Oh, baby. Talk about a way to announce that NFL package is coming to your streaming service.
Why not?
Just outbid everybody, right? Screw you, NBC. You know, for Bezos, he'd be going to the old ATM machine. We will get to some Bruins coming up, but first, let's trend.
As the world reopens again, make sure to keep Gresh and Keefe a part of your routine. And if you missed a show, download the podcast at WEEI.com.
Shot by Keandre Miller, he scores! The Bruins score! Richie! 2-1 Bruins, Pastrnak! Here's Strome, back out, Buchnevich, Zibanejad, score! Back to Buchnevich, then Boteto, across to Lafreniere, he scores! Here's Krejci into the slot, backhand shot, score! Back out for Zibanejad, that's his 200th! And now the Bruins! Now it's a one on the Bergeron redirect, and that will do it! The New York Rangers end their five-game losing streak.
That's what it sounded like on Saturday. And, the Bruins blew it. 5-2 loss to the Rangers. But it sets up an interesting scenario for the Boston Bruins tonight. The Bruins will be taking on the Islanders over at TD Garden. For those of you who are part of D-Generation Vets, Bruins are minus 170 on the old money line. And if you want the puck line, you're laying a goal and a half for plus 150. But, Rich, when we look at the NHL standings in the East Division, the Penguins have played their 56 games. They're at 77 points. The Capitals have a game left. They are 2 points behind the Penguins. Then there's the Bruins, who have only played 54 games and play tonight and tomorrow night. Tonight it is against the Islanders, and tomorrow it is against the Capitals. So if my math is right,
yes,
if the Bruins lose these two games, they could set themselves up for a first-round series against the Penguins. If they beat the Islanders tonight, it's pretty much locked that they're playing the Capitals. And why would you play that game hard tomorrow night against the Capitals if you know you're going to match up against them in a playoff series? So,
right.
What do you do?
Yeah, see, I don't know. I don't think it matters who you play in the first round. I think you can kind of talk yourself into, oh, the Capitals would be the worst matchup. No, the Penguins would be the worst matchup. And but you're going to have to play them both anyway, in all likelihood, right? Like, say you stay where the standings are right now. Bruins Capitals in the first round, then Penguins Islanders. You play the winner of that. I don't think it really matters. I don't think there's one. I don't look at one of them and say, ah, that's unbeatable. Like, they've been able to, against all these teams, the other three teams that are in the top four in this division, even if it was a slow start against some of them, they kind of rallied around. And since they've had their team, I have confidence they can win a seven-game series against anybody. So I don't think it really matters.
I think in terms of the overall opponent, I don't know. I there's just something about playing the Penguins that I kind of like right now for the Bees. And that we know that second line has stepped up and played really well. Right, I'm talking on Greg Hill this morning about, you know, guys who have or haven't been sat down. And Wiggy ended up making the point that, hey, man, they wrote it out with Krejci. And now look at what's happened when you put Taylor Hall beside him and Smith has stepped up as well.
Right.
So, yes, there is a little bit of the, well, we love this matchup or that matchup. You know, Pittsburgh closed pretty well. They were 8-2 in their last 10. Capitals and the Bruins are just kind of the same. And really, the Islanders are the team that has sputtered. And it's interesting because when we first started this show on March 15th, there was the thought that, hey, the Bruins could be the odd team out. And,
right.
And maybe it's either like the Islanders who step up or Philadelphia's got a chance to play well. And we know what the Bruins have done since the trade deadline, and they've gone streaking and the other teams have kind of gone in the tank. But I think people were looking at these final four teams and it was like, okay, this isn't the final four that I thought would be here in the East.
And I think the only thing too with the Bruins is you might as well get the as many points as possible because we do see upsets in the playoffs, and then you will then be the home team. So let's say you're the third and the Islanders, they knock off Pittsburgh. Well, then guess who's getting more home games in that next round? Or if the round after that, like once you get to what would have been the conference finals, the final four, if you will. Once you get to the final four, it's also going to be based off of points. So say there's a couple upsets along the way. All right, well, now there's going to be more games in Boston. Like, that's the one kind of advantage to that. But I think you can already see the most important thing is just getting everybody right. Charlie Coyle isn't going to play these two games. Cassidy said he's probably going to be ready for game one. So, all right, so you can sort of, and then you pick, you got Tuukka going tonight, not going to play in the finale, and then, you know, you're just kind of lining everybody up to be in the best position possible for game one.
So for those who, I don't know, maybe you're just a casual hockey fan and you don't know how it is going to work this year. So the NHL realigned into four divisions. And by the way, I forgot that the East Division was sponsored.
Yeah, they're all sponsored.
They are.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Mass Mutual East, the go. Discover Central, the Honda West, and the Scotia North Division.
Rolls off the tongue.
It totally does. The top four teams in each division will qualify for the playoffs. The traditional best of seven four-round format. First two rounds, interdivisional play, 1-4-2 against three. The four teams that advance will be seeded by their regular season point total. So to your point, the whole points matter. The number one against the number four and the number two against the number three. And when you look at it across the board, Toronto is at 76 points. So they're the team that would be leading the North. But if any of either Edmonton, Winnipeg, or Montreal come out of there, the Bruins have more points than those teams already.
Right.
Teams in the Central, Florida and Carolina would be able to trump you. Although Tampa does have one more game to play, they can end up getting to 77 points overall. And then Vegas would be that team in the West, although Colorado has three games in hand, and they're at 76 points. So there are some teams that could bump you, but it is a factor. And the reason I went through all that is because the overall point total is a factor if the Bruins end up getting out of the divisional format. So you can look at it both ways. Would we rather tank the next two nights, get rest, and have a matchup we want in the first round? Or do we go for it, get the most amount of points, hope the chips fall where they may, maybe you end up getting a number two seed, and then you have a home series in a conference finals?
Yeah, I'll just take them getting healthy and, you know, getting into the play. I'm not going to lose my mind. Like, you know, watching the Celtics kind of just, you know, watching opportunities. I don't think it's going to be like that. And also, in a crazy turn of events, you might get the Bruins cryptid, Andre Kasha, playing tonight. He hasn't played since January. He's played two games all season. They acquired him at the deadline last year. You remember he was the last guy to report to the bubble. I don't know if either he had COVID or he was near somebody with COVID. That was one of the early cases that the Bruins had. And he was supposed to be this kind of scorer, or like he was, hey, you put him with David Krejci and you got business. Well, we haven't seen anything out of this guy at all. And so he's going to play tonight, although when Charlie Coyle comes back for the playoffs, I would assume he just sits back down. But they had their morning rushes today, and Kasha was on the fourth line with Lazar and DeBrusk. And the third line kind of looks like the fourth line. It's Corrali, Wagner, and Richie. Right now is the third line.
Doesn't it feel like there's going to be a little bit of experimenting going on in terms of the third and fourth line and tinkering a little bit just to see sort of who earns the minutes? Because now it's gone from who are the Bruins going to put on the second line to the first and second line are okay. How are they going to configure the third and fourth lines come the postseason? Mm-hmm. I mean, what a luxury and what a difference like 14 games make. I think that's how many it's been since the trade deadline. We were scoffing over the second line. Now it's, which guys are going to be on the third and fourth line?
Oh, I know. And even the defensive pairings, after such a long year with so many missed games, so many guys that were hurt, now you look at it, Grizzlick, McAvoy, Riley, Carlo, Lozon, Clifton. I'll take that. I'll take that six going in.
Yeah.
You know, you feel pretty good.
Especially with the goaltending. And, of course, that still has to be finalized yet. We'll see if Halak ends up making the postseason roster or not.
I think
the odds are that he's not.
Right.
But he's going to be that guy in waiting. Hey, another hockey story to touch on is Connor McDavid, who has gotten to 100 points in 53 games. Now, I remember growing up as a kid, and Mario Lemieux was my favorite hockey player. But I remember in the old days of the NHL, the whole 50 goals in 50 games, right?
Yeah,
Lemieux tried to, Lemieux and Gretzky and guys like that, right? So I saw this nugget here. Only four times as a player reached 100 points in fewer games the past 30 years. No one has done it in 25 years.
Wow.
Just to put into context what Connor McDavid has done, Mario Lemieux did it twice. You know how many games it took him to do it? 100?
To get 100
This
points?
Is 100 points.
Oh.
He did it twice in 38 games.
Stop, come on. I swear to God. I was going to say like 50 or 60.
Yeah.
38 games.
Mario Lemieux accomplished the feat twice in 38 games in 92-93 and 95-96. Gretzky did it in 50 games in 90-91. And how crazy is this? Jaromir Jagr did it in 52 games the same year that Lemieux did it in 38 games in 95-96.
Yeah, those guys were ridiculous.
So you had one guy who did it in 38 and another guy in 52 games who each put up 100 points. And basically, Lemieux wasn't halfway through the year, and Jagr was barely not even two-thirds of the way through the year when he did it.
And he's 24. Connor McDavid's 24 years old. This is his fourth 100-point season. Last year in 64 games, because it was obviously abbreviated, he had 97.
Which, so you'll take.
And so he has not had a ton of postseason games. I think he's played in a total of 17.
Oh, I was going to say like four.
Well, no, it's two runs. Back in 17, they won a couple of rounds. And then last year they got bounced out pretty early. So at least he's going back this year. And that's where you can start to see, all right, that's great that he has all these regular season points, but is he going to be able to, a guy that, you know, carries
the team?
There you
go. And in a lot of ways, that's sort of the situation with Taylor Hall now, right? Former MVP.
Yeah.
Now you're heading into a postseason with a good team.
Right.
Can this guy be a top-line type scorer? Because That's what he's been here. Mm-hmm. He's really been a top line guy if you look at the point production.
Oh yeah, he's been awesome. And now for the first time in years, you feel good about the first two lines for the Bruins.
It's amazing. It really is. And congrats to Connor McDavid. I mean, that's a hell of an accomplishment, man.
It is.
God, Lord knows if Pastrnak did something like that, everybody would be going
and it's
nuts.
He has 100 points. Second in the league is Leon Draisaitl, who's on his team, who has 79. So gap there.
Wow.
And actually, Brad Marchand's tied for third.
How about that?
Yeah, not bad.
He's had a fantastic year. I got to go slow here because the dork world is in mourning. A major loss over the weekend. Cue the white snake. We will dork it up in memoriam next.
Online or over the air, we don't care. Just make us your new midday habit. Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
Now, a hashtag dork news flash.
Here I go again on my own. Going down the only road I've ever known.
I know that some on the text machine are taking me to task for saying that this is not a dork story, and I would say au contraire, mon frère, because on Saturday, the world learned the passing of Tawny Kitaen, once a love interest to O.J. Simpson, sprawled out on the front of a car because of David Coverdale of Whitesnake, Mrs. Chuck Finley for a period of time, and, well, then it went all downhill from there, and I know that the Dork podcast will be dropping tonight.
Yes, we will spend some time talking about friend of the podcast, Tawny Kitaen, who absolutely is in the hashtag dork wheelhouse because we do movies, we do TV show. We'll dabble in music every once in a while, but she was both a TV and a movie star.
That's right.
And not just, you know, music TV. She did a lot of different things. She, of course, was in Bachelor Party. She was in the horror movie Witchboard, which is one of my wife's favorite horror movies from back in
the
80s. Yeah, Witchboard, she was in that. She was also in The Surreal Life. She was in an episode of Seinfeld. She dated Jerry
for
a little bit. She also dated Jon Stewart, I believe. She was the voice of Annabelle in Eek the Cat, which was a great animated show in the 90s.
Yep, the Cat?
Eek the Cat was fantastic. She also, unfortunately, was in an episode of Botched where she played herself in the episode titled Boob Trains and Big Butts.
By the way, for those who have not watched that show, Botched,
it's a hard watch. I can't do it.
It's a hell of a ride.
I cannot do it, but she was in that. She famously had not one botched surgery in her time. But of course, I was not far from Tawny Kitaen back in, God, this must have been 3 or 4 years ago at Comic-Con with two N's. The Comic-Con held in Foxwoods, Connecticut.
When you were hanging with Joshua Adams?
That was Boston Comic-Con.
Oh, okay.
He was in Boston, although he was probably at this one as well. And they always have a panel of people. They all get their own like desk, and you get to go and, you know, pay $5, $10, $15 bucks to get a picture or an autograph or whatever.
Let me get the Polaroid for $10.
And so you meet all these different people. So me and Davey Eyeballs were there, and we were getting ready, and we were just standing there. We're getting the lay of the land, and the door opens, and enter Tawny Kitaen.
What did you do at that time?
Well, a guy wheeled her past us. She happened to be wheelchair bound at the time.
Oh, shouldn't be laughing.
No, you shouldn't be. But I think she was actually fine. I think she might have just been tired.
It was like
a
Paul Pierce situation?
She got out of the chair and then got into the... I think she just wanted the escort, maybe.
She came back in the game.
And I was like, Davey, what do you think? Should we go talk to Tawny Kitaen? Or do you think I have a chance? He's like, yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
So we were just within reach of the great Tawny Kitaen and unfortunately passed away at the age of 59 this weekend.
You were the first person I thought of when I woke up and I saw on TMZ that she had passed. And by the way, for a period of time, I think it was like Friday night into Saturday, there was the, oh, she dead, is she not dead? You know, like one of those deals.
Who'd they just do that with?
I forget who it was.
There was another one of those. You're like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to be the first on this.
Exactly
right. You get this one right.
So, ultimately, they announced that Tawny Kitaen has passed away.
It was Tanya Roberts. Thanks, John.
Oh, Tanya Roberts.
Yeah, they
did.
Very
good.
It was like, just kidding.
And I saw that Davey Eyeballs tweeted, because I know you're going to get into it tonight.
Yeah.
RIP pick of the pod.
Yeah,
for those who aren't familiar of the This is like on a headstone and everything.
Oh, it's a big
what's
deal.
What's the genesis of this?
Yeah, so Pick of the Pod has become the new RIP, if you listen to the Hashtag Dork podcast, because usually at the end of every episode, we suggest something, like maybe a TV show or maybe a movie that you haven't seen or a video game. And this was like a couple of years ago. Davey, he saved his Pick of a Pod for somebody who had died. And so I go, this isn't your, so you're promoting the dead person? And then it sort of just led organically to the Pick of the Pod. So instead of RIP, say P of the P.
Now, I know that I'm not stealing the whole, you know, guess the Google autofill, but I just typed into Google Tawny Kitaen best work. And this is what came up. Music, video, star, and actress. So yes. What is Tawny Kitaen? Like, what is... I will
music
forever
video star, because back in the 80s, music videos were massive. Super popular. Yeah, massive. And a lot of people probably think she had her debut with the Whitesnake video.
Yes.
It wasn't. She actually dated the guitarist, I believe, from Rat. And she was in the music video Back for More in 1984 for Rat. I guess she went to high school with that guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she went to high school and she dated the guy from Rat. And then she later went out with the dude from Whitesnake and it appeared in like a bunch of their videos.
That's what I remember. Believe it or not, and I'm not a huge concert guy at all, but 13-year-old me went to go see Whitesnake.
Oh, you did?
With my dead buddy Tommy Russell and his drunken friends.
Oh.
And I got back from the Pittsburgh Civic Arena at 3:30 in the morning when there were no cell phones. So there was an angry coal miner who had a belt in the right hand and a wrench in the other and was like, I don't know which one to hit you with, boy. Yeah. I got the belt. Couple times across the back, and it was like, don't ever do that ever again.
You're like,
13-year-old me learned, don't go with your friends.
No.
Especially if you went to the Whitesnake concert, because you're automatically thinking.
There's just trouble there.
Yeah, that there's going to be trouble there. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Tell you what, though, they were hanging from the rafters, and there were people waiting to see if Tawny Kitaen was going to like come out on
stage.
Did
she show up?
Oh, she did not, no.
Oh, that's a shame.
No. In fact, it was Whitesnake and Great White was that concert. And unfortunately, we know what happened with Great White down at the station nightclub in Rhode Island and that whole hideous tragedy. But hey, Tawny Kitaen made it to 59. If I would have asked you a couple years ago what's the age gonna be, I most would have taken the under on 60.
It's a good run though. You know, she lived an active life.
I hope that there was a book somewhere and a
Tawny Kitaen book.
Oh yeah. What do you come on now, she was with rock bands in the 80s.
I was gonna say rock
what
bands.
What do you think that she has seen
Simpson,
in the
Chuck Finley.
My god, Oj, and that was
John Stewart.
Was it post-murder Oj that she was with?
No.
It was pre-murder Oj.
No,
okay.
It was
alleged murder because
hey,
he was...
Hey, Twitter world, yours truly.
That's right.
Yeah.
By the way, we did check the Twitter of Oj Simpson. There was no homage to Tawny Kitaen on there.
Yeah, he was married to Nicole
Brown.
While they, and apparently, I guess it was during the civil trial that information came out. That
he was with Tawny Kitaen.
Yeah, because I don't think anybody really knew about it. And then that came out. You're like, oh, boy.
Holy cow. Yep. So, Dork Podcast tonight.
Yes.
You can check it out on the Dork Podcast on YouTube. So, you can watch it as it's going down, or you can just download it off of WEEI.com or the Odyssey app. And God rest Tawny Kitaen for all of the years of entertainment and for some people, the visual they need to go to the Hand Old Opry. Mm. Coming up, if you think Danny Ainge needs to break up these Celtics, okay, we can discuss, but what if they go on another playoff run? Keith and I will get into that. 25 minutes of Uninterrupted Sports Talk next.